I say to them, I say, well, what would you rather me be? Laying in bed or like rolling up in a ball and rolling under the bed, completely debilitated by this, or getting up, regardless of how I feel after my infusions or radiation treatment, and fighting that way? To me, fighting is getting out and moving.
This is Running for Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running for Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode 145 of the Running for Real podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am really excited you are here. And this is such a special episode. I'm just excited to be able to share it with you. Now, we are in episode 4 of Beyond Running. Now, every Monday for the past 8 weeks, for the rest of the eight weeks, we are covering a topic that's often left unsaid, something that usually makes people feel a little bit uncomfortable because we don't really come across it because people keep it hidden, they're very embarrassed to talk about it, or it's something that they don't feel like they've got someone to talk to. So it's often left unsaid. As I said, people hide it from the world. And in some cases, we have no idea these even exist. So I know people are working through them because you tell me so. I read about these really hard times you're going through when you open up your heart and share your deepest struggles with me through these emails or when I meet you in person. And I always felt like I could never do anything to ease the frustration, the pain, the loneliness you felt. All I could do was listen. But I felt there had to be something I could do to make you feel less alone. So I decided that I was going to create this series, and it's just been fantastic to hear your responses so far and how much you're appreciating them. I decided it would be 8 topics that are specifically things that people have reached out to me about. If you have something, maybe I'll do another round of these in the future. And hopefully we can reduce stereotypes and show those who are working through it that they're not the only ones. So there's no sponsors for these episodes, but if you are appreciating them, if you could support me on Patreon, just a few dollars a month goes a long way to support me. You can find out more at patreon.com/runningforreal with the number 4. And if you can't do Patreon, maybe an iTunes rating and review or whatever podcast channel you use would be another way to support me. So thank you for that too. All right. So episode number 4, today is a little bit different. I recorded this episode when I was in New York for the live show a few weeks ago. I went to the headquarters of Achilles International, which is a nonprofit organization that provides support, training, and technical expertise to runners of all levels with all kinds of disabilities. I actually had the honor of getting to run with the Achilles kids in the New Balance Fifth Avenue mile while I was there, and it was just an incredible experience. In the previous episodes and in the coming episodes, the focus more was on education, what to do if someone you love is working through it, or what to do if it's you. Now, today is a bit different because these two guys I brought on had such incredible stories of inspiration. I wanted to give them the time to talk about that rather than making it just about what to do. So maybe I will do something on that in the future. Both Mauricio Blandino and Alan Kaufman are going to share their story with you. And I also have the director of the Achilles program for the New York City chapter, Michael Anderson, with us in the room. They were all such wonderful people, and I hope you can follow along with what they're doing in the future, as well as supporting Achilles International in any way you can. Finally, just a little warning, we were recording in New York, and even inside, the ambient noise can be a little bit loud. We were passing 2 mics between us, so the audio quality for this episode is not the best. I apologize about that, but I believe the stories you are going to hear are going to far make up for that. So let's go meet Mauricio, Alan, and Mike, and get right to the episode. Michael, Alan, Mauricio, I am so honored to be sitting here with you in the Achilles International. Is this HQ?
Yes.
Okay. So the Achilles International headquarters, we are sitting here in New York. I'm honored to be here with these guys right now. Looking forward to a great conversation. And Mauricio, we're going to start with you today. So I would love for you, if you as the 2018 New York Roadrunners Achilles Athlete of the Year, if you could tell us, we're going to go into what led you to get that accomplishment very soon, but I would love for you to tell us what happened 9 years ago to make your life change forever.
Good morning. Thank you, Tina. Well, it's almost 9 years ago that I had a fall down the staircase of my house. I was not aware that, it was a hard fall I had, but I was not aware that I had created a subdural hematoma. which I did not give attention to for almost a week until symptoms started to arise, balance, headaches, and I saw my doctor, and that's when they discovered that my cranial cavity was filled with blood, coagulated blood now, and excessive amount of cranial fluid. He immediately escorted me to the hospital here in New York, in Queens, and I never left the hospital. I had an emergency bilateral craniotomy that kept me in the hospital for a month, and afterwards it was a challenges that I had as far as regaining my walk, my focus, memory issues were developed, my taste buds also went, vision problems, cognitive and vestibular issues were at hand now.
And when this was kind of happening, how you said you didn't leave the hospital, how long were you in there for?
In the hospital? Mm-hmm. 4 months.
4 months. Yes. And during that time, what was kind of going through your mind? Were you just living moment to moment, or what were you thinking at that point?
Well, during that time, I was in pain. It was the only focus I had to concentrate on was the pain. And I had family around me that kept me grounded. I was not taken out of bed for about 2 weeks, and that's when I noted that my walking had been affected. There's spasticity in the right leg, that the control of the right step in the right side of my body too was affected. That's when I began to take note of the deficits that were at hand.
Mm-hmm. And prior to this point, had you been someone who had ever had health issues? Was this the first time you had ever really had something kind of come up like this? Was it a big shock?
This is the big wall I crashed into. No, I never had health issues. I was quite healthy, actually. I was a long-distance cyclist. I did a lot of charity rides, Boston to New York, AIDS rides several times, actually. Not into any sports with ball game sports.
Okay.
So cycling was my main focus.
And then once life kind of calmed down, I mean, you mentioned the pain. There was obviously a lot of trauma going on in your body. But when your life kind of calmed down a little bit and you finally had some time to kind of think about your future, what were some things going through your mind there? Was it kind of despair? What were you thinking?
Well, reality set in, sure. Then there's that clinical depression that just came on itself. With depression on top of that, I still deal with the two. There was anger mm-hmm. at the universe. My eye-hand coordination was also a big problem. I am a jeweler. That ability to focus and maintain, do detail work was totally affected till this day.
Yeah, and that had to be very hard. And, at that point, that was where running kind of found its way into your life through an injury association group. So I'd love for you to
crept into my life. I also have to give thanks to the Brain Injury Association of New York State, the New York City chapter, which was recommended for me just a year into my recovery. One day I heard that we were going to have a guest speaker, and lo and behold, it was Achilles International that came and showed up that day and spoke about their organization. They had athletes. They had a spokesperson there, a neurologist who also brought information regarding the benefits of physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, my doctors were already insisting I take my physical therapy out of the clinic. I was isolating myself. The clinic and the program I was attending at Mount Sinai were my only outlets. So within a week's time, I went to my first Achilles chapter gathering. And actually, a group of us from the Brain Injury Association went that day.
Oh, okay.
So that day I had support.
Yeah, it didn't seem so intimidating.
Yes, exactly. And yeah. Once there, I was introduced to an array of athletes with various challenges. And it amazed me when I heard them tell me their stories of accomplishments. And they just didn't match the picture I've always had of a marathoner. Yeah. I've always watched marathons on TV. And so I had my own set image of that typical athlete. But no, you don't have to be that typical image of an athlete to be a marathoner or a half marathon or just a runner in itself.
What would you like to tell someone listening who maybe feels has that same image as you of a marathoner?
Oh, no, drop that image. Absolutely. We can accomplish things in with any ability, any physical status, structure. We just need the heart and the persistence and believing in yourself. And that took a little while for me to acquire that belief.
Absolutely. Yeah. As it would, I think, with most people, you know, regardless of how they come into running, that's usually the case. And I want to pass over to Alan now, just so we can learn a little bit more about you. And then Mauricio will come back and talk about what happened after that day. So Alan, let's kind of start with the beginning of your story. Being running kind of helped you determine what had happened or what was going to happen in your life, how it was going to change. So tell us about what happened one day when you were running.
Well, Tina, thank you for having us this morning. I was a runner, an avid runner for many, many years. I did my first New York City marathon in 1992. I participated in 24 New York City marathons, 11 as an entrant and 13 as an Achilles guide. In June of 2017, I came back from a run and noticed the left side of my body was feeling stiff. I was having odd accidents around the house. I stepped on the cat. I poked myself in the eye with a butter knife. Something felt very odd. We finally went to the emergency room, and long story short, I was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic melanoma. I had 5 brain tumors and 1 in my lung. So life went from running in the park on a beautiful June morning to 18 days in the hospital. The traditional prognosis for metastatic melanoma at that point, prior to immunotherapy, was 6 months. Chemo didn't work. I endured 11 hours of back-to-back brain surgeries, spent the 18 days in the hospital contemplating life, figuring out where I was going to go. The first conversation I had with my neurosurgeon was, will I run again?
Typical runner there.
It was. He looked at me, and he was a smart guy, and I think a runner himself, and he nodded, and he said, you'll know when it's time. It's June. I'm thinking I'm going to be guiding for Achilles in November. I kind of got that out of my mind. But I did take a victory lap around the hospital 2 days after my surgery, documented through pictures and videos that my family took. It was probably the greatest run of my life.
Oh, I can imagine that would be the case. And, you know, you said that running was something that you wanted to do as soon as you could, and you had that conversation with the doctor. Why? I mean, most people listening are going to know this already because they feel that same thing. All of the people in this room get it. But why was running the first thing? You know, to a non-runner, hearing someone say that when someone could run, when they're in a life-threatening position, would just be like unheard of, why they would ever think that. So what was it about running that made you want to get back to that?
Running and the feeling of movement to me was a life affirmation that if I could get out of bed, do a lap around the hospital ward, if a week after getting out of the hospital, I could walk around the block with my cane, if I could even aspire to a marathon 18 months out, it meant I was here, I was fighting, I was going to do my best to get through this any way that I could.
And so you did that victory lap, you did that little run, and then what happened after that?
I went home and spent several weeks in rehab, both physical therapy and occupational therapy. It was very disconcerting. I couldn't write my name. I had taught myself to juggle a few months earlier. I couldn't juggle anymore. I was 59 years old at the time, and up until my illness diagnosis, I was thinking, oh man, I'm going to be 60. I don't want to be 60. Mm-hmm. And the thinking went from, I don't want to be 60 to, God, please let me reach 60, which I did. I'm 61 now. So it was in steps. One of the very first things I did when I was well enough, I went to the New York City Marathon in November 2017 to see my Achilles friends, and I stood at a halfway point. I guess it was the changeout station, mm-hmm. and I saw the athlete I was going to guide come through, and we hugged, and he made me promise I'd be back in 2018. I emailed a woman who was at Achilles at the time. I got a really wonderful package in the mail a few days later from a man named Michael Anderson with an Achilles t-shirt and a handwritten note, and I sobbed. I said, I'm an Achilles athlete now. I'm starting my training. It was a defining moment for me. A week later, I was in Flushing Meadows Park in Queens, working out with Achilles Queens as an Achilles athlete. I love that. And it really was that moment where I'm going to fight this disease. And I met Mauricio that morning, too. It was like 15 degrees out. This guy comes charging by me. I'm saying, who's that? And that's Mauricio. So I don't know if you remember that, Mauricio. Flushing Meadows Park, it was Christmas Eve day.
I know. I recall that moment. Yes.
Were you trying to impress him as you ran past?
Perhaps.
It was the first moment of inspiration. I'm thinking, I don't know this man's story. I don't know what his challenge is. But if I can run like that at some point, I'd be very happy.
Oh, I love that so much. And how did that feel for you going from someone who used to guide, used to be the person who was giving the support to being the one receiving it? Was any part of that difficult or was it a smooth transition?
It was a smooth transition and really, it was effortless. I was just glad to be part of a group where every Sunday morning and at special events and races, we'd congregate in our beautiful Achilles shirts, celebrate life, celebrate our triumphs over our challenges, be together. The great thing about Achilles is that we're serious. We respect each other, but we know how to laugh and be silly. Mm-hmm. And that's equally important.
Absolutely. A sense of humor is critical in most life situations. All right, Michael, I'm going to hand it over to you. Now, as someone who used to be a competitive athlete yourself, and you know you've been very involved with Achilles, how does hearing stories with like Alan's and like Mauricio's, I mean, how does that make you feel? You must hear these stories daily. So, how do you kind of how's this changed your opinion of the world, your perspective?
I have to say that I will never forget getting Alan's letter at the end of 2017, and that was, for me, life-changing. I had been in the position at Achilles for about 6 months at that point, and I loved what I was doing. I was very passionate about what I was doing, but getting Alan's letter gave me a new sense of renewal of the passion and just reminded me of how important the work is that we do for Achilles. Mm. What I remember about that day, it was the day before Thanksgiving. And here in the United States, that's usually kind of a getaway day. People aren't taking their work very seriously. People leave at noon, 2 p.m., if they come in at all. I was here, and it was, you know, it was getting towards late afternoon. I was about to sneak away, maybe get in a shakeout run before the turkey trot, see if my wife needed any groceries picked up, and Russell Copeland, who Alan mentioned earlier, director of volunteers at the time, she said, hold on, you have to see this letter. And I read the letter and I was completely moved. In it, Alan explained that he had been a guide for numerous years, run the event on his own, and he couldn't think of a better way to celebrate his 25th marathon than as an Achilles athlete. So I turned my computer back on. I put the welcome package and t-shirt together. And I said, I'm getting this in the mail today with a handwritten note. And I went into the Thanksgiving holiday just completely motivated and energized. So I think that's a very long answer to your question. So while I love being a runner myself, and I am proud of, you know, getting out there to try to chase PRs and age group wins and qualify for Boston, that's all good and well. But what I love, what has really made me love running even more, is stories like Alan's and Mauricio's and others from Achilles, who I, whether I'm out guiding or I'm just out in a race and I see them, it makes those pains that you feel as an athlete when you think, how am I going to hold on for these last few miles? It temporarily makes those pains go away, and it helps you to push on to really meet your own goals as a runner.
So you do think about them often during, you know, the tough parts of your races?
Often racing and training. It was earlier this year when an athlete named Adrienne Haslett from Boston, she's an amputee runner. I don't know her. I just am always very moved by her and what she posts on social media. She was at the point, she's a Boston Marathon bombing survivor. She was doing amazingly well as an athlete, and talk about bad luck. She was crossing the street, legally had the right of way, and a car hit her. Yeah. And that set her back. But I remember I had a 20-mile run in the freezing cold that weekend, a day or two after this happened to her. And every time I was trying to push the pace, I thought of her and what pain she was in the hospital, and how she can overcome, I can overcome.
Yep. And I think that's an important point that we all need to kind of keep in mind, because at the end of the day, there are these people like Alan Mauricio who are out there doing things, could have easily said, you know what, I'm just going to stay in and just take it easy and let life kind of pass me by, essentially. But no, they didn't do that. And we're going to dive into the stories in a minute, just a little bit deeper. But before we go on any further, Michael, tell us a bit about, by now people have got a gist of what Achilles International is, but tell us overall, kind of for someone who had never heard of it before this interview, what is Achilles International?
Achilles International is a nonprofit organization. And what we do is we empower athletes with all different types of disabilities to mainstream into athletics, specifically running and adaptive sports like our hand cycling program, our triathlon program. We welcome people with any type of disability. Anyone with a disabling condition is welcome to join us. So people right away think, oh, you're the organization with the blind runners. Absolutely, that is true. But we have folks with MS, with CP, with brain injuries, recovering from life-threatening cancer surgery. Mm-hmm. Anyone who seeks to improve their lives to overcome a disabling condition is welcome to join us. And that's what's so awesome about Achilles. And we provide support runner guide runners to run or walk with them. So whether someone is looking to cover a 5K in under an hour or run a marathon in under 3 hours and qualify for Boston, we are welcoming of everybody. And that's what's so incredibly moving about the Achilles workouts and the organization.
I love that. And you earlier, before we started recording, you told us about a way you tend to refer to the athletes that are in the Achilles program who are a part of what you do. So I would love for you to share that with us, just for anyone listening who, you know, wants, maybe has someone that they connect with regularly who does have an acquired challenge or a challenge they've been working through their whole life, but isn't sure kind of how to talk to that person. What would you say there?
The first thing I'd say is to not be afraid to engage in a conversation with an athlete who has a disability. And a runner out in, I believe it was Phoenix, and I wish I knew her name, one of our chapter athletes from the West Coast, she said once about being a runner with Achilles, I'm an athlete first, I'm a person second, I'm a person with a disability third. So we tend not to use the term disabled runner. It's okay if someone says it, they don't mean any harm. We use the term athlete with a disability because that's what you are first. You're an athlete.
Yep. Okay, great. Thank you for explaining that.
Sure.
All right. I'm going to have you pass it back over to Mauricio now. We're going to go into a bit deeper into his story.
There we go.
All right. So let's go talk about, we are in New York City. Talk about the New York City Marathon. That has an important, meaningful connection to you. Tell us about why and where you went from to where you were able to reach.
Well, I did not join Achilles to run. It was just to acquire an exercise program, just like my doctor had insisted take my walking exercises outdoors. Mm-hmm. And he also saw the social factor, too, that I was going through the depression. He knew I needed to be around others and to be around like individuals. That helped tremendously. I came across individuals who of all different challenges. That was a comfortable setting. Hearing their stories, hearing how they now moved on, using running or walking at any pace to enrich their lives. My first activities were to walk the bridle path in Central Park. Mm. Slowly I began doing that, gaining my the rhythm of walking and holding that rhythm for X amount of minutes, doing it repetitively. I was assigned to a wonderful individual's guides, who another important factor to have, you know, these individuals to motivate you, to encourage you to move on. Big-hearted individuals, absolutely. So it was one step at a time that got me walking, and my pace, holding the pace, was the biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. One thing, once you gain that the ability to get that rhythm back, the left and right of your coordination of your feet and legs, and arms to swing evenly, and holding it for a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and that slowly grew into half an hour, and then I started increasing my pace to a fast walk, and then a fast walk and jog and a slow run, and then to a steady run. It probably was about a year that I did my first race, the race for rehab. Mm-hmm. It was, my first race, my first time ever crossing the finish line. So empowering it was to cross that finish line. I didn't get a medal. That didn't mind. I didn't care about the medal. Just that I was able to complete this this event. That was the most incredible experience, really. And
just crossing that finish line.
And that, from that day on, I allowed running to take me to wherever it wanted to. I began to, I continued to meet with Achilles on Tuesday nights and Saturday mornings, and even days during the week with the guides and friends now. Mm-hmm. Met through Achilles. We continue with our training, and I was not training for any events. I was just training for myself to get my body back, to gain control of my body. And the empowerment I received from my first race was the fuel for me to continue.
Would you say you loved running by this point, or was it still?
I loved what it was doing to mm-hmm. my body. It was doing to my brain. My focus was it helped with my focus, mm-hmm. Focusing and maintaining my rhythm, maintaining control of my body. That was an important thing, to regain control of my body, and mm-hmm. it still is. In the fun of it, there's always fun around Achilles, and that also helped. Mm. Every time I go out for a run, there's fun in there. To this day, I mean, no matter how long that run is, there's always fun involved, and that's really been an ingredient to my recovery.
So when did it go from being something, like you said, that was empowering and making you feel good and making you appreciate your body, to being something, you know what, I want to achieve something here. You know, you set this goal of running 3:45 in the marathon, which is no easy feat for anyone, let alone, you know, what you had been through. So when did it take that next step into, you know, I want to do something really special here.
Well, 3:45 didn't come overnight. My attendance with Achilles was to be part of the community, this whole new community of friends now that I've made. That was my reward, and for the physical aspect to oxygenate my brain. I loved how it felt after a long practice run. And that was my only interest until one day a friend of mine, Alan Tyson, said, hey, there's the Staten Island Half coming up in a few months. How about doing that? Alan is also a brain injury survivor, and we became friends from day one. So he understood what I was going through, and I already had begun admiring what his strength and how far he had taken his new ability. He's an Iron Man.
Oh wow!
All this time I'm studying Alan to see where is he getting that out of from where is he getting that energy from. But we all have that energy within ourselves. We don't have to look far. It's there for our taking. So he gave me a program, training program, which I followed and continued. And then, lo and behold, come that October, I am running the Staten Island Half. And again, another sense of empowerment. But in between, just before that, my third event, my third race, I participated in my first medal was the Achilles Hopes and Possibility 5-miler at that time. Now we have a 4-mile race. But yes, I was now loving running. I was now loving the whole aspect, the community, the effect it had on me. And I continued to challenge myself physically. I stopped looking at the finish line. The finish line was rewarding. I knew I could do that. I knew I could get across that line. But again, I felt my body growing and developing with every week that passed. It's been my aim to recover as much of my deficits or horn them to the best as I can.
And would you say running has had an impact? Even you mentioned things even as specific as your taste buds have most things
tremendously. Absolutely, it strengthened my core to be able to maintain my balance. I still I run very mechanically. I'm always conscious of where my right foot lands, controlling the rhythm of the flow of the movement. I don't look up much. My focus is within a 10-foot diameter bubble. I lose balance, my balance very easily. Any interruption, any bumps, shoves from other runners, it's challenging to run.
Yep. Okay. Well, that even more impressive with what you've been able to do with it then. And what about the depression? You mentioned you had depression. Did that start to kind of slowly fade away?
You know, it's still there, but it's I've learned how to handle it. I learned how to not just handle that, but other aspects of my life. I have a full platter of things. I'm better now at handling situations, everyday situations, and big issues in life that pop up. I have more control of myself to be able to handle things now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. And I want to actually talk about that in a little bit when we talk as a group about how that kind of side of things can affect it. But maybe Alan will continue on with the next part of your journey. So for you, you're coming from kind of the other end of things. Mauricio kind of learning to run, becoming into the running community, whereas you were kind of always ingrained in it. You were a very experienced marathoner. How did that feel for you going from, running these marathons, being able to pretty much do whatever you wanted, whenever you wanted, pick races, and suddenly, life has changed? And I'd love for you to share about your most recent New York City Marathon experience and how you were able to kind of handle that.
My most recent New York City Marathon was my 25th. It was a special one, as mentioned. My first one as an Achilles athlete, first one to celebrate life and my continuing recovery from cancer treatment, my 60th birthday. I came up with an expression recently, Tina, called, I call it last is a blast, which was this gradual realization. I'm not going to do, I was never a talented marathoner. I think my best time was 3:59, the year my daughter was born and I was going on no sleep. But I learned to accept that do not make bold predictions of time. Just be out there, enjoy. Like Mauricio said, finish line, I didn't imagine. My biggest adjustment for the 2018 marathon was to worry about my guides, who were friends. They were both neighbors, men who had said to me immediately after I got sick, we're going to guide you. And to remind them that, look, walking 26 miles is a lot different than running. Absolutely. Both had done the marathon as runners, as entrants, and just worrying about them. We got an early start, which was wonderful, which kept us on the course with other runners for a longer period of time. They had to get used to the fact that by hour nine, the New York City Police Department had opened the roads and we were on the sidewalks. It was helping other people to adjust to my challenge.
So was it, like, what made you worry about them? Was it just you didn't want them to have kind of unrealistic expectations of what this was going to be like? Was it that you didn't want to kind of worry about your own concerns, so it was easier to kind of, you know, it is easy for us, isn't it, to focus on someone else rather than ourselves? What
good
do you think
point,
was going
Tina.
Into
yeah,
your mind
it
there?
Was worrying, like you said, it was just worrying about things that maybe were beyond my control. My first time as an Achilles athlete, and I had gotten a lot of attention. So there was a little bit of pressure. You better finish this race. I had a severe back spasm at mile 23. I was laying on the sidewalk, and I thought my guides were going to kick the life out of me if I didn't get up. We didn't go 23 miles not to finish. And they're wonderful, wonderful guys. So there was always that moment of meltdown possibility. But I knew I was going to finish. My wife and my sister-in-law and her son were sitting in empty stands in Central Park. It was dark out. But Achilles people were still there at the finish line for us waiting. I felt very supported. And the first thing I entered my mind was I got over the finish line. Maybe I've made my point. The second thing I thought of is I'm coming back next year to do number 26.
I love that. Well, you have to do number 26. I mean, that one.
I'm committed. I've been doing my practice walks. The other thing is when you're training as a walker for a marathon, it's a lot different. I'm still doing the requisite mileage in preparation, except this is kind of a duh thing, but walking 20 miles takes a lot longer than running it.
Yeah.
And I did a long 20 miler 2 days ago, and it took 6.5 hours. And yeah, I'm fortunate in that I've got time on my hands to do it. But training by yourself, I'm a writer, so I'm writing things in my head. I'm singing to myself. It's a mental game. A lot of it is a mental game, I find.
I would love to talk about that just a little bit more because, you know, the mental side of things, you know, Mauricio mentioned he had struggled with still is working through depression. And that is another thing that maybe isn't talked about when it comes to going through these life changes or people who have had these challenges their entire life. How does your mindset kind of change with that? Because I think a lot of people think that, particularly someone like you who's, you know, had this cancer come into your life, they think, oh, you're just going to be appreciative and grateful and everything's going to be kind of, you're seeing everything as good because you're realizing like, wow, this is life-threatening, so I better be happy because I better make the most things. Do you ever struggle with kind of the other side of things thinking, you know, oh, I just can't keep going through this. Like, I've had enough. Like, how do you get through that?
I'm continuing treatment. I had a little bit of a setback over the summer where the cancer in my left lung wasn't responding to the immunotherapy treatment, so it was radiation. And that was the first thing in my mind. I was like, how am I going to, well, I do the marathon and my radiation oncologist is looking at me. He's like, you got to be kidding me. I went through radiation, shortness of breath. It slowed me down. The internet is your best friend and your worst enemy when you're cancer patient because Dr. Google, you type in and your prognosis isn't as rosy as you want it to be. The thing about cancer treatment now and oncology in general is that you are now, your thinking goes from will I be cured to how will I live with this? Treating it like a chronic condition really was helpful to me. Then I'm going to live with it. I'm going to do my races, get up in the morning, make coffee, go out, walk for 5 hours, do what I need to do, mm-hmm. and live my life.
Yeah.
We all know that you can be crossing the street and, God forbid, you get struck by a truck.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a roll of the dice when you get out of bed, no matter how
Absolutely.
Healthy you are. And that was how I look at things. Every new day is a gift.
And did you, related to that, you know, I often use that example of being hit by a car when people say they're worried about me doing this or that or anything else. And I'm sure you must get that a lot, or both of you actually, about, you know, loved ones saying, oh, I don't know. Like, I feel like you should be safe. I don't know if that's the right thing to do. Like, what do you say to those loved ones kind of in that, you know, frame of mind of I can't live my life based on the what ifs?
I say, well, what would you rather me be, laying in bed or like rolling up in a ball and rolling under the bed, completely debilitated by this, or getting up, regardless of how I feel after my infusions or radiation treatment, and fighting that way? To me, fighting is getting out and moving.
Yep.
And that kind of shuts them down. I mean, I've got an older mother living in Florida, and she worries from afar. I've got two grown children and a wife. They worry closer to where we're, you know, where we are. But it's my life. I'm unable to work, but I was a writer and an actor and a TV producer by trade. So I'm still able to write. I just don't have the mojo right now to go and work a 16-hour day as television production typically mandates. But I'm trying to find a way to get my life back to work, to be valuable. As a video maker, I make videos of our team working out. Or if there's an event, I bring a little video camera. Or I'll do some animation or draw. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to take everything I know professionally and plug it in to my Achilles life just to feel like I'm being useful. That's the important thing, is to feel useful.
And so what would you say to loved ones listening right now who may have someone in their life who they really love and care about and want to protect them, want them to be safe? But maybe get the sense from what you're saying that maybe they're being a bit too protective. Maybe they should let them kind of go out and do what they want to do. What if that person is listening right now, what would you tell them based on what you've learned to tell your family?
Trust your loved ones. If they're making a decision and they're dealing with a life-threatening illness, they will instinctively know what to do. I think the entire template now of cancer care and a cancer patient has gone from the 90-pound bald person to somebody who you can't tell they're sick. Mm-hmm. I mean, I go for treatments every 2 weeks and everybody looks good. Everybody's struggling and everybody's got their thing, but medicine has changed. If somebody's challenged, let them address the challenge in the best way they can.
Okay.
And let them define themselves in the best way that they can.
Great,
it's all about definition,
yes.
Defining yourself.
Absolutely. And choosing to define yourself rather than
right.
letting anything else define
Me,
you.
I'm still the marathoner. I'm the crazy marathoner. But my neighbors will say, oh, you're like walking with your trekking poles. What happened? And I'll tell them and they'll make the sad faces. I'm out here training. I'm out here. I'm feeling good.
So on that note, just for someone listening, as this is kind of in this Beyond Running series that I'm doing here, what would be your advice for someone who comes, I'm going to ask each of you this as well. But if you come across someone who is working through, having cancer, working through an acquired challenge, who has had a challenge their entire life, how should the person listening try to treat that person? You know, you mentioned the sad face. People want to kind of give what they think is sympathy, may show, oh, that's so hard. But what are some things that maybe aren't what you want to hear or aren't what you want to see and what is instead?
I don't mind when somebody says to me, oh, you look good. I don't like when somebody says to me, oh, you don't look like you have cancer. Mm-hmm. I mean, but what does cancer look like? There's a way, and people are uncomfortable when they hear, there's a way that, you know, you smile and you kind of gently correct. I feel good. You know, I'm feeling good. I think we have to practice in how we address people who are responding to our challenges. So you don't want to make them feel bad by saying the wrong thing, but a way of maybe correcting the way they think.
Okay. Any particular suggestions you would say there for that?
Just say, hey, you're looking good. Okay. You know, hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Yes, we have
doing.
And
then just carrying on with, like, how are you?
I don't like focusing. When I first got out of the hospital, they shaved my head. I had shoulder-length hair. I went to, like, bald guy with the horrible scars, and people were horrified, and I wore like a do-rag, you know, these people were buying me these funny things to wear on my head, and like, what happened? You got a haircut. And you would explain, people are curious. I think 99% of the time it's genuine love.
Yeah.
I have the sanitation guys in my neighborhood honking their horn and asking me where the snow is when I'm walking with my trekking poles. And you might think, oh, that's not really, but they're trying to be nice.
Yeah.
And then if like I run into them in the deli, I say, hey guys, by the way, this is what I'm dealing with. And it shuts them down. Yeah, but then next time they, you know, they'll honk the horn, give me the thumbs up, and it's a different dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess most people just wouldn't think about it. All right, Mauricio, let's ask you about this. So from your perspective, what you see, what would you tell the loved ones listening of someone who, if they have someone they care about who is working through a challenge, they want to like pad them, they want to protect them. I'm sure you had this with you having that fall.
Continuously. They're concerned, they worry about me, whether I'm just doing too much that's going to affect me physically. They do know that I have got I go through chronic headaches on a daily basis. From the 1 to 10, I usually stay around the 3 to 4. It easily escalates. They're concerned about that. I stop giving out too much information to stop them from worrying. But I know myself. I know how much I can challenge myself. I work along with my doctors. I inform them about that too. I'm not doing this on my own, really. No. I'm taking full responsibility and being responsible with it, and keeping my cardiologist, my general practitioner alert of what I'm doing, and with my follow-up checkups. That helps to soothe my family members. Yes. And all I ask them is, listen, motivate me, encourage me to do more, because and point out from where I started to where I am now, and how great I'm feeling, how great my life is. It's a whole new platform that's been created here. Mm-hmm. Another thing too, it helps you educate individuals about brain injury.
Yeah.
Like Alan mentioned, that you know, there's we have no physical note that people can see about issues here. So it gives me a moment to point out issues about brain injury, which is something that it's a new platform now. I'm an advocate for the Brain Injury Association, and the more I talk about it, the better it is, and more information needs to be out there. They're brain injury individuals really show no symptoms outwardly, and it makes it easier for others to talk about themselves too. Just like depression, it's something that you really don't see. The more we talk about it, the better it is for others, educate others that come out and talk. Talking is so important. It soothes us. It makes us more comfortable to know that others are understanding.
Absolutely. Yep, and that is my exact reasoning for this series here. And I'd like maybe you can pass it over to Michael here. And Michael, based on kind of working with Achilles, you know, working with these different athletes going through various challenges, what have you learned about maybe what both the guys here were talking about, the physical, maybe being able to see someone is working through a challenge or isn't, and what you have learned about how people listening should treat those who they do come into contact with who are working through some kind of challenge?
I love that Mauricio likes to say that running an Achilles has given him a new platform. Mm-hmm. That's one way of looking at it. I hear sometimes runners come out for their first time as guides, and they what I do is I welcome the group in, and I explain not every disability is visible. So someone, you may be wondering, what am I doing here? Why am I running with this person? I say, be patient, be kind, be there as support. Gradually, over the course of however long you're walking or running, most likely the person you are guiding will become comfortable sharing what their disability is. So someone might be chugging along with Mauricio at a under 8-minute pace and wonder what's going on here, but they might learn at a certain point when Mauricio needs a break for balance reasons, or they might see him almost trip and fall and they'll go, oh, okay, I get it. So I really do encourage people to not be afraid to ask questions and just be patient and let the process take place.
Okay. And then what about the mental side of, you know, Mauricio just said the more we can kind of bring depression, bring especially the mental illnesses back out to the forefront to kind of talk about here. Do you see that as something quite common with people who are working through challenges, that they do kind of the grind of having to face this every day is kind of gets to people? And what have you learned with kind of working through it and how we can help people?
As a runner, I've always felt that having a goal is helpful, and having a community, friends, supporters is so helpful in overcoming challenges such as depression, anxiety. And that was so much more reinforced when when Achilles became a part of my life. I know personally, for me, it was 1999 when my father passed away. I had always said, oh, I really want to get back into running. I had been a cross-country runner in high school, and I always made up a reason not to do it. And I was hitting rock bottom, making bad decisions in my life, and running was what pulled me out of it. So I remind myself of that, of how running can help Achilles runners as well. One of our blind runners, Anthony Butler, he likes to say, you know, I didn't have the means to travel when I was growing up with my family, and now Achilles is my family, and it's taking me to places that I never thought it would. So I feel it's so important to just get out there and have those conversations. And in some cases, it leads to so many great things. I hear stories from Mauricio, from a runner named Jean-Pierre who has a brain injury. What I hear from them is, I've been running and I feel so much better. And when I went to see my doctor has now lessened my medication or even temporarily taken me off of my medication, which was never possible before. So is that directly related to running? I don't know, but I hear these stories so many times, and it just really reminds me of how important this community is.
I love that. Thank you so much. And so, you being the director of the New York City chapter of Achilles International, for someone listening, if they are in New York, have obviously got an easy way in to get involved. But if someone is somewhere else in the US, and I think you're just US.
We are international.
Oh, international.
You
that
can
makes
find
a lot
us
of
in
sense.
Japan, Mongolia. Yep. We'd be here all day if I described all the chapters.
Okay, so tell us, where's the best place for people to go find out more information? What about someone who, you know, would love to be like Alan was, a guide for someone? Like, where can people find more, and what can they do to be involved?
AchillesInternational.org. If you want to volunteer, click on the volunteer section, or you can click on chapters. It'll take you to New York City chapter, where you can find information on volunteering as a guide with us on Tuesday nights in Central Park, Thursday nights in Prospect Park, Brooklyn, Saturday mornings in Central Park, and Sunday mornings in Queens, of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And for someone who is in maybe a city where there isn't a branch of Achilles, what can those people do?
Our director of national chapters, Ellie Cox, will send you a very nice letter with a t-shirt and explain how you can get out there as an athlete with disability and what resources might be available to you. Okay. And certainly we'll provide opportunities for you to run with us at a race. So maybe someone is able to train with a friend who's a guide runner, but maybe they can't bring that person to New York City to run the marathon. We'll provide that guide for the marathon if necessary. Mm-hmm. We'll get creative. We'll find ways to make it happen. And just as I want the volunteers to come check out Achilles, I want anyone who has ever thought about overcoming a challenge or a disabling condition, please, I am happy to get on the phone with anyone. I do love being able to have a phone call with someone before they attend their first chapter workout, and then I can welcome them with open arms and say, come join us. You're going to really like it. You're going to be happy that you came out.
Yeah, I think this interview today has kind of proved that. And just to kind of wrap up here, I want to ask both of you guys, Alan and Mauricio, just to kind of overall here, what has your physical challenge taught you about life, about human beings, about just kind of the greater meaning to this place that we live? that maybe you weren't thinking about before when you were just kind of chugging along with life?
Being sick has allowed me to realize the beauty of things I never thought about before. A rainstorm, walking in the rain is great. Getting up before the sun comes up. You appreciate life in an entirely new way. You appreciate your friends in an entirely new way. And even for me, Achilles personally, going from being a guy to being an athlete made me appreciate just the love people are capable of.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I love that so much. Right, Mauricio.
There's more joy to life, absolutely. I feel more. I'm more open to my emotions. Whether that occurred after my TBI or by the TBI, I don't know. But I am more open to my emotions. I'm more responsive to the emotions of others. I'm living life the full as I can, to the full capacity that I can. I share myself more. I'm more in tune with others. Empathy is something that I'm more connected with. And that's allowed me to share my experience as a runner, as a survivor of a brain injury, and encourage others. In my organization, the Brain Injury Association, I am with to come and go out and with friends and with this chapter and regain control of your life again, because the ability is there. Achilles has the support to give you. And it's just one step at a time, like with your running, and be willing to accept a hand.
Yep, I love that. Thank you. All right, if people want to find you, Mauricio, I don't know if you use social media or if there's a website or if there's anything. How can people kind of follow along with you? Is it just going to be following through into Achilles International?
Well, I'm on Facebook, Mauricio Blandino, and I post all my events.
Michael's
see,
nodding.
With my brain injury, with my brain injury, I have an issue as far as recalling memory. So I take a photo of all my training runs.
Okay.
So I do post that a lot. Again, for myself and to share with others which I've accomplished. Yesterday, I've been training with this great coach, Anthony, and yesterday we did a speed workout of 3.5 miles. And to my surprise, I thought I was running much slower, very sluggishly mentally. I felt that, but it turned out to be my best run so far. 6:35, I think it was, that we were pacing the last mile.
Oh,
it's been a wonderful experience here. I did, with the 3:45 that he mentioned, my finish time for New York, I was able to qualify for the Boston Marathon for my age group, giving them 10 extra minutes.
The Boston just gone?
Yeah, yep. And for this new one too, hopefully. I'll use that same time. I believe they'll accept that.
Yep.
It's the qualifying time for 60 plus years.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. All right. Alan, what about you?
I've been keeping a Facebook journal of my cancer adventures through essays, through my cartoons, drawings, and videos. I don't like calling it a journey. I call it an adventure. Journey means, like, to me, journey would be going to Tibet. It romanticizes cancer in a way that I don't like. But on Facebook, Alan Corey Kaufman Facebook, you'll see my essays and my cartoons. I'm on Instagram as Alan Kaufman and on Twitter as Alan Kaufman.
Great.
All a way of sharing, sometimes oversharing, making people comfortable with the condition and hoping to educate as well.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. All right. And Michael, tell us just the Achilles in general, or Pete, or yours, if you want to share those.
Absolutely. On Facebook, Achilles NYC, as well as Achilles International. Like I said, we are international. also on Instagram, Achilles NYC, where you will find posts about our awesome athletes and our weekly and monthly races and events. And personally, at Mike Runs NYC on Instagram. I'm very happy that I snagged that before somebody else could. And I'm often posting about just my joy of running with Achilles and accomplishments as well. And you also get to see pictures of my adorable Bichon Frise as well. So
your Lulu. Adorable what?
My dog, Lulu.
Oh, your dog. Okay. What is that the type of dog?
The type of dog is a Bichon.
Bichon. Her name's Lulu. I've never even heard of that. Okay. I'll have to look up Lulu because I have no idea what she looks like based on that. All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me today. This has just been an honor to get to know you. And I really appreciate you being honest and open and sharing your story. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Tina.
Thank you, Tina.
Thank you, Tina.
My friends, if you have a minute and you could leave a review on your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, aka iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or whatever else podcast player you use to listen to this podcast. Or if you would subscribe to this podcast, you will help me get out in front of new runners to make our tribe even bigger and even better. It might not seem like you as one person can make a difference, but really, it helps a lot. And it shows me you appreciate the hard work I put in for those. Thank you so much. What an inspiration. I am hoping to be able to see them both this year running the marathon. And if there was some way you could go watch the New York City Marathon, go do that too. And maybe you might see another person that weekend you may recognize. Can't say any more right now, but maybe you will see someone else. Hint, hint. Thank you for listening to the show. I appreciate you taking the time to learn more and grow. Share these episodes with your friends and family. Help us all be better educated in how to treat those around us who may be living in a different situation to what we are. If you appreciate me in these episodes, I would really appreciate your support on Patreon. That means so much to those of you who already support me. And you get some bonus interviews, you get the opportunity to ask upcoming guests your questions. And if you can't do Patreon, a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast will be wonderful too. On Friday, we have Thabang Madiba, who is a South African runner who is winning trail and mountain races all over, but he's coming from such humble beginnings. This guy is one of those people who makes you just want to go out and run, even if you just finished a run. Be sure to tune in on Friday, and I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Running for Real podcast. Be sure to check out tinamuir.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.